Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, November 18th, 2021. County appoints Dina Jo Lasoya Marquez for Interim Justice of the Peace by Sam Karras, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. At the stroke of midnight on December 6th, Presidio County's Precinct 1 will have a new Justice of the Peace. In October, current Precinct 1 Justice of the Peace, David Beebe, announced he would be stepping down from his position a year early after serving his post for 7 years. In Texas, the Justice of the Peace handles traffic fines and misdemeanors, small civil suits, landlord-tenant disputes, magistrate duties, and more. Presidio County has 2 Justices of the Peace split into precincts that roughly divide the county at Elephant Rock along Highway 67. At last Wednesday's commissioners' meeting, the court entertained an agenda item to appoint Beebe's temporary replacement, serving from December 6, 2021, until the end of the term on December 31, 2022. The county put out a call for applicants in the newspaper and broke into executive session to make their final decision. After a long deliberation, they appointed Dina Jo Lasoya Marquez as the Interim Justice of the Peace. Lasoya Marquez has lived in Presidio County for 26 years, 6 years in Presidio as a youngster, and 20 years in Marfa, where she currently works for Marfa ISD. "Presidio County has always been my home," she said in an interview with the Big Bend Sentinel. She has an educational background in criminal justice and hopes to use what she's learned over the years to serve her community. For her first 16 years in Marfa, she worked as a juvenile probation officer. 4 years ago, she took a position in the school system. She started out in the Disciplinary Alternative Education Program and In-School Suspension, or DAEP/ISS, and more recently has taken on a role in Special Ed Teaching Contact Mastery. Throughout her time working with young people, she's been a champion of the Red Ribbon Program, which teaches drug awareness and prevention. Lasoya Marquez is looking forward to spending more time face-to-face with her constituents as COVID restrictions in the county ease up, and invites the public to visit with her in her new office at the county courthouse. "Those doors are going to be open with open arms," she said. "My job is to provide information to the public. I'm working for y'all." She's planning to run for the office in hopes that her term as Justice of the Peace will extend beyond the temporary year-long appointment. "I like to strive. I like to make positive impacts," she said. "Have faith in me. I will do the job, and I will do it honestly. Give me the opportunity to prove it, and I will prove it." County approves new precinct boundaries by Sam Karras, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. Presidio County Commissioners Buddy Knight, Jose Cabasuela, and Brenda Bentley voted Monday to approve slight changes to boundaries that will shift a few county residents' representation in Commissioners Court. Commissioner Eloy Aranda and Judge Cinderella Guevara were absent from the proceedings. The changes follow the late release of the 2020 federal census count, which reported an overall population decline in Presidio County. All Texas counties are split up by population into four commissioner precincts that must be roughly equal in population, so their lines shift with each new federal census count. The commissioner's court votes on county-level matters like taxes and roads. Those boundaries also affect electoral precincts, which are smaller than commissioner precincts, and determine where individual voters can vote. According to the new census, the largest underrepresentation in Presidio County is in Precinct 3, represented by Commissioner Eloy Aranda. The commissioner's challenge was to shift constituents in Knight's overrepresented Precinct 4, but there wasn't a straightforward way to do that because the two precincts overlap in the rugged and remote Sierra Vieja Range in northwestern Presidio County. They decided to shift some of Knight's constituents to Precinct 1, represented by Bentley, who could then give up a few of her blocks in northeastern Presidio to Precincts 2 and 3. In Marfa, those living south of Waco Street in central Marfa and west of Edinburgh Street south of Highway 90 will now be considered Precinct 1 residents, represented by Bentley. In Presidio, the new maps split the city a little more cleanly along Irma Avenue, with most blocks to the west in Commissioner Aranda's Precinct 3 and the east in Precinct 1 or Precinct 2, represented by Commissioner Cabezuela. Presidio residents in the northeast part of town will likely notice the most changes. To achieve cleaner precinct lines, the commissioners chose Louvain Avenue as a convenient boundary where Precincts 1, 2, and 3 meet. Allison Bass and McGee, the Austin-based law firm helping the commissioners to draw up the new maps, also drew up recommended updated Justice of the Peace precincts, but departing Justice of the Peace for Precinct 1, David Beebe, and Justice of the Peace for Precinct 2, Juanita Bishop, agreed that the current boundaries would be easiest on law enforcement and citizens. Justice of the Peace precincts differ from commissioner and electoral precincts because they aren't representative and don't have to abide by the same rules about population distribution, so they can be redistricted as needs change, but aren't legally required to. Redistricting at the county level happens every 10 years with the release of the decennial federal census. This year's census was late, putting a time crunch on the process, but the commissioners were able to draw up and approve the maps with the required public hearings over the span of a week. The quick turnaround will ensure that anyone who wishes to file for local office in the March 2022 primaries will be able to do so in the current correct precinct. The city of Presidio is working with the state demographer to challenge the 2020 census results, which many officials feel dramatically undercounted the border city's population. It's possible that the county could redistrict before the next census if the revised population counts aren't adequately represented by the new boundaries, but there isn't extensive legal precedent for that process. For now, the new boundaries will hold. Despite the rush, Commissioners Bentley, Knight, and Cabezuela agreed that the process was, quote, pretty painless, end quote. Judge recommends lower payout or new trial over damages in Sanchez's case against Presidio County Treasurer. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBenSentinel.com. Presidio County. U.S. Magistrate Judge David Fannin has recommended that Katie Sanchez, the former director of the county's Office of Management and Budget, can either face a new trial to reconsider the payouts for compensatory and punitive damages, or accept a smaller damages package devised by Fannin. He also denied nearly all of the county and Garcia's post-trial motions in the same document. Earlier this summer, a jury found that Presidio County and its treasurer, Francis Garcia, had retaliated against Sanchez, a former county employee, after she ran for office against Garcia in 2018. Initially, the jury had given a verdict that the county and Garcia should pay $1 million in compensatory damages and another $1 million in punitive damages, but in recommendations made this month by Fannin, the judge wrote he believed the amounts awarded by the jury as to compensatory damages as well as to punitive damages are excessive. The court has the power to recommend a decrease in the jury's verdict, offering Sanchez the choice between a lower remittiture amount or a new trial on the subject of damages. While Presidio County has not asked for a reconsideration, Fannin went ahead, lowering the compensatory damages amount from $1 million to $365,362.03, citing case precedents and calculations that include factors like emotional distress, inflation, and economic harm. He also dropped the punitive damages from $1 million down to $5,000. Fannin said that for Garcia, the jury award of punitive damages beyond $5,000 was excessive in proportion to the evidence provided. In a motion to the courts, which Fannin had considered, Garcia had said that even if malice was proven, the damages assigned to her of $500,000 were grossly excessive. In his recommendations, Fannin wrote, "While trickery and deceit are more reprehensible than negligence, Garcia's actions in inciting the elimination of the OMB are poised somewhat near a midpoint of the two," concluding that Garcia's conduct was moderately reprehensible. Sanchez's attorney, John Winke, said he was surprised by the recommendations, especially since the county had not requested that he consider the amount the jury awarded. "Obviously, we respectfully disagree with the magistrate judge's recommendation regarding remittiture," Winke said in an email with the Big Bend Sentinel this week. "We believe his recommendations to reduce the amount of damages awarded was improper." Winke argued that the jury's high award of $2 million reflected the evidence and testimony presented at trial and was intended to send a message to public officials. "Obviously, we respectfully disagree with the magistrate judge's recommendation regarding remittiture," Winke said in an email with the Big Bend Sentinel this week. "We believe his recommendations to reduce the amount of damages awarded was improper." Winke argued that the jury's high award of $2 million reflected the evidence and testimony presented at trial and was intended to send a message to public officials. "I'm not sure what type of message is being sent if a $1 million punitive damage award is reduced to $5,000, the attorney said. "Publicly elected officials retaliated against a single mom by eliminating her county job simply because she exercised her right to run for public office. You hear about government officials in foreign countries that retaliate against political opponents," Winke said. "That should not happen in America." Sanchez's team will file objections to a portion of the magistrate's recommendations for U.S. District Court Judge Count's consideration, and there will be a new hearing unless Sanchez accepts the package. Along with contesting the jury's damages total, the county and Garcia made post-trial motions calling other parts of the case into question. In his recommendations this month, Fanning denied a long list of motions for judgment by the county and Garcia, siding with the jury's findings in favor of Sanchez. In legal code, courts will uphold a jury verdict unless the facts and inferences point so strongly and so overwhelmingly in favor of one party that reasonable jurors could not arrive at any verdict to the contrary. But if a rational jury couldn't reach the verdict that was announced, the court can accept the county and Garcia's renewed motion for judgment. In those motions Fanning considered, Garcia argued that she did not have budget-making power when the county voted to eliminate the Office of Management and Budget, which employed Sanchez. She claimed she could not be held liable personally for violating Sanchez's constitutional rights, since she didn't have official decision-making power. Fanning, however, determined that the jury was given sufficient evidence that Garcia not only had known personal problems with Sanchez, but she specifically made several efforts to bring to the commissioner's court's attention the OMB and plaintiff's performance, noting that most of the evidence in the trial came from Garcia herself. He also pointed to case law that established those without final decision-making power can still be liable for being a link in the causal chain of violating constitutional rights. Fanning believed a reasonable jury would see evidence of Garcia's discussions and relationships with commissioners ahead of the vote to eliminate the OMB and determine she was a link in the chain. Fanning recommended that all of Garcia's motions be denied. The county also sought a motion for judgment as to whether Sanchez proved Presidio County had acted in a retaliatory manner, since they had a reason to abolish the OMB department to save money, which was non-retaliatory. Judge Fanning said Sanchez had brought evidence that the county attorney Rod Ponton had informed commissioners in a speech and a letter that their actions could be construed as retaliatory. The county also claimed that they can't be liable unless the commissioners as a whole, not just some commissioners, acted with unconstitutional motive. Fanning said the testimony by Judge Cinderella Guevara that she had developed suspicions as to Commissioner Loreto Vasquez's and Commissioner Brenda Bentley's motivation made it so a jury could reasonably believe two of the four commissioners acted with animus. However, that didn't meet a majority of the court, where four commissioners and the judge all have a vote. Judge Fanning wrote in his recommendations that he believed the jury could have reasonably believed Aranda possessed a substantial retaliatory motive because Ponton had warned commissioners ahead of the vote. Overall, the judge denied nearly all of the motions, only making a recommendation that would change the status quo when it came to the punitive and compensatory damages. Pete Gallego resigns from Solros presidency after 16 months in office. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBenSentinel.com. Alpine. Solros State University president Pete Gallego resigned from his job in a Friday afternoon announcement last week. The Alpine-born, Solros-educated attorney will have served just 2 years as president of the university when he leaves office in June 2022. After much reflection and discussion with family and friends, I have decided to step away from my responsibilities as president at the end of the academic year, Gallego said in a released statement. This is not an easy decision, but it is the right decision for me and for Sel Ross, the university I dearly love. President Gallego's commitment to Sel Ross long preceded his tenure as president, and I know he will continue to serve the university long after he leaves the president's office, said Texas State University System Chancellor Brian McCall. I'm particularly grateful for the way Pete has connected and cared for Sel Ross students, many of whom are the first in their families to attend college. Gallego was appointed as the 13th president of SRSU in June 2020, after serving in public office previously as U.S. Representative for TX-23 and for many years as a state representative in the Texas legislature. He faced a series of obstacles while at the helm of the university and its three satellite campuses in Del Rio, Eagle Pass, and Uvalde. He inherited the school's chronically declining enrollment, faced a debate about moving the institution into a new university system, grappled with recommendations to reorganize departments and lay off staff, all while managing complications caused by the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Gallego's office declined a request by the Big Bend Sentinel to interview the president and redirected questions to the communications department of the Texas State University System. The Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board showed enrollment declining at the Alpine campus from 1,644 in 2019 to 1,557 in 2020, and further down to a preliminary enrollment of 1,485 for the 2021 fall semester. At the satellite campuses, the school grew in 2020, dipping slightly this year, though still remaining higher than 2019 numbers. The school was able to achieve a slight uptick of semester credit hour enrollment this year, despite the pandemic's effect of decreasing enrollment across many higher education institutions in the United States. In any year, that would be good news, but particularly through the lens of COVID, it's extraordinary news, said Mike Wintemute, the Vice Chancellor for Marketing and Communications at the Texas State University System. Enrollment numbers have exacerbated the financial challenges the school is facing. In the past year alone, 27 faculty have left or been fired, and the school has shuttered amenities like the school's child care facility. Earlier this year, Gallego rebuffed recommendations made in a report by the Academic Planning Committee, which rattled employees as it recommended sizable layoffs and consolidations of departments. Meanwhile, at the state level, the local senator of District 19, Roland Gutierrez, introduced a bill to move Sel Ross into the A&M University System after over 100 years in the Texas State University System. While the effort gained little traction in the legislature, a vote taken by the Faculty Senate of the Sel Ross satellite campuses in April resulted in the Faculty Senate approving a resolution in support of the move to Texas A&M, an opinion at odds with Gallego's decision to stand firm with Texas State. As news broke of the resignation last week, the university was also in the final stages of its search for a new provost. That process was seemingly uninhibited by the sudden resignation. On Monday, SRSU announced the hiring of finalist Bernardo Joaquin Contanz, PhD, who currently serves as Associate Provost and Chair of Philosophy at Moravian University in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, contends, accepted the offer after hearing of the news of Gallego's impending departure, a spokesperson from the president's office said. Wintermute, the university system spokesperson, said, "We are obviously sad to see President Gallego moving on, but excited for the opportunity to continue momentum on some of the challenges facing the university. The university system will continue to improve Sol Ross online offerings, and this week the Board of Regents will consider allocating $59 million for capital construction projects at the Alpine and Middle Rio Grande campuses. All of those initiatives will continue unimpeded," he said. In light of Gallego's announcement, the Texas State University system will develop a transition plan to search out and identify its next SRSU president. Gallego wrote in his statement Friday, "We're building a new Sol Ross. I'm proud of what we have accomplished, ensuring the university's financial stability, laying the foundation for a more robust recruitment and retention program, enhancing the college experience for our students, and taking the necessary steps to ensure a smooth and successful SACS accreditation process in 2023. I am grateful to Chancellor McCall and the TSUS Board of Regents for giving me the opportunity to serve Sol Ross as its 13th president." Presidio County's candidate filing period. Open positions and how to run for local office by Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. For those wishing to occupy public office, it's time to apply to appear on the local ballot for the primary elections on March 1st, 2022. Positions up for election in Presidio County include County Judge, District County Clerk, County Treasurer, County Commissioner Precinct 2, County Commissioner Precinct 4, Justice of the Peace Precinct 1, and Justice of the Peace Precinct 2. The open filing period lasts from November 13th to December 13th, 2021. To apply, candidates must go through Republican County Chair Dan Dunlap or Democratic County Chair Clark Childers. Candidates can either pay for entry on the ballot. Fees range, depending on the position, from $375 to $1,250, or receive a certain number of signatures. Signatures needed are 2% of people that voted in the 2018 general election, or around 34 signatures. County Clerk Florcita Subia, who took office this past June after Virginia Payares retired, is up for election. She said she plans to get around 50 to 60 signatures in the event not all who signed are qualified as registered voters in the county. Dinijo Lasoya Marquez, who was recently appointed to serve as Justice of the Peace Precinct 1 after Judge David Beebe resigned, will also be on the ballot in the upcoming election this spring. Candidates who succeed in the spring primary election will go on to the general election in November 2022 and will ultimately take office in January 2023 if elected. All open positions are 4-year terms. Early voting will take place from February 14th to February 25th, 2022, before Election Day on March 1st. Helpful information on qualifications and how to apply can be found on the Secretary of State's website, https colon /forward/state.tx.us/elections/candidates/candidates.shtml. Dan Dunlap, Republican County Chair for Presidio County, said he has had 3 precinct chairs apply so far and plans to run again for Republican County Chair. While his position will be up for public vote on the ballot, precinct chairs are voted on or appointed within the party. He says he has been in conversation with several members of his party interested in running for the open county positions, but no one had filed formally as of press time. Dunlap says in his experience, candidates often wait to see who else is running, filing closer to the deadline. Historically, local public office has been almost exclusively held by Democrats. According to Dunlap, the Republican Party is making strides toward giving Presidio County a 2-party system by actively recruiting candidates. "We're trying to make this a 2-county party and give people a choice," said Dunlap. Dunlap has information packets and forms needed for filing for the Republican Party in the primary. He can be reached here, P.O. Box R, Marfa, Texas, 432-295-1668. DanDunlap69@gmail.com. Democratic Chair Clark Childers announced recently he will be stepping down after 3 years in the role. He said he hopes to find someone equally as passionate to take up his responsibilities and plans to train his replacement. Reflecting on his time, he stressed the importance of local citizens in making elections happen. Like Dunlap, Childers has been in contact with people interested in running for public office, but no one has filed as of this time. For more information on how to get on the ballot for the Democratic Party, contact PresidioDemocrats@gmail.com.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm recording the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, November 18th, 2021. FSISD adds to housing arsenal, by Nathan Heuer. School housing for professional staff within the Fort Stockton Independent School District made a significant leap in quantity on November 15th at the district's meeting. The Fort Stockton ISD School Board decided to move forward with the purchase of the Spanish Trail Lodge for $705,000. The facility is planned to be a significant recruitment tool for new professional staff in the future. When we went back and forth, the administrators were excited to be able to use this as something they could dangle in front of professional staff as we try to attract more individuals to join the district, said Gabriel Zamora, superintendent. The 19-room facility, which had an original price tag of $850,000, will have affordable rent and would be paid for month to month rather than a yearly lease. When new professional staff gets hired next year, and if they're having a hard time finding a place, this would be a great option for them to move into until they can find a more permanent option. The superintendent added that if the right set of circumstances arose, the facility could house current employees and potentially non-contracted staff down the road. If the facility does not fill up by the time school starts in the fall of 2022, the facility will come with its current furniture and will soon be available. Fort Stockton man charged with assault, by Nathan Heuer. A Fort Stockton man is being charged with aggravated assault and being held in the county jail on a $100,000 bond after shooting in the early morning hours of October 31. The Pecos County Sheriff's Office reported that Ronald Baca, 35, was arrested on November 5th after allegedly assaulting John Brian Rivera on Halloween at the intersection of 53rd Lane and Highway 18. Pecos County Sheriff T.J. Perkins said that his office received a phone call on October 31st regarding a hospitalized shooting victim. After interviewing the victim and proceeding with an investigation, the sheriff's office arrested Baca. It's still an active investigation, but we put the pieces together and an arrest warrant was issued. He wasn't present at the scene, so we had to investigate it, gather evidence. He was arrested later at his residence. Perkins added that Rivera was in stable condition. Once the investigation is complete, the case will go to a grand jury. On November 16th, Perkins reported that the investigation was still ongoing. Hotel tax to aid convention center renovations. The Fort Stockton Convention Center will begin to receive additional funds for the renovation of the facility beginning December 1st. A new hotel tax will begin to be imposed within city limits starting on December 1st after a canvass of votes was approved by the City Council's regular meeting on November 8th. The city held a special election on November 2nd in order to pass a hotel occupancy tax, which is to not exceed 2% of the price paid for such a room. There were 349 people who voted in the election, 206 for, 143 against. Hopefully everyone understood that this is strictly for the traveling public that are staying in our hotels and motels. They are the ones who pass, not the local citizens. With the approval of the votes, the maximum hotel occupancy tax rate imposed from all sources in the city will now be 15% of the price paid for a room in a hotel. COVID-19 cases on the rise again. Confirmed COVID active cases in Pecos County are once again on the rise after a resurgence of the virus in the last 2 weeks. The number of active cases in the county was 29 on November 5th and increased 46 as reported on November 16th. On November 11th, the number of active cases surpassed 40 for the third time since the Delta variant was tracked in July. Active case numbers increased over 40 for the first time since August 26th. That number surpassed 40 active cases once again on September 29th and then dropped below 40 on October 10th. The last COVID-related fatality in the county was on November 4th, moving the total in the county to 15 since July 28th and a total of 48 since the beginning of the pandemic in March. There has been 404 vaccine-eligible people tested positive for COVID since July 28th. Of those 404 individuals, 324 were not vaccinated. The number of vaccinations in the county has seen a slow but steady rise. There have been 346 residents who received their booster shot in the past 11 days and 41 who have become fully vaccinated. A total of 9,804 people who reside in the county have received one dose of a vaccine out of the 14,618 people who are eligible to receive a shot. Montoya hired on for city marketing by Jeremy Gonzalez. Melba Montoya was hired on October 18th as the marketing, sales, and events coordinator for the city of Fort Stockton. The full-time position has kept her busy with promoting the city's convention center, which is still undergoing renovations. The completed areas include the city's CVB offices, designated meeting spaces, and recently opened movie theater. With the theater previously existing here, it was a space we really wanted to take advantage of. It was an opportunity to provide the community with some family-oriented entertainment and to reintroduce this building. The movies are all free of charge. We do have $1 concession items, which include popcorn, pickles, and drinks. The idea behind bringing back the movies was to keep people here in town for their family's entertainment. The former Annie Riggs Memorial Museum director said the next movie will hit the big screen will be Homeward Bound on Tuesday, November 23rd at 3:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. With a heavy roster of friendly family-friendly movies. The theater will be showing Love and Basketball for an older crowd on Saturday, December 18th at 7 p.m. For the holidays, the theater will be hosting a Christmas camp for children, which will include showings of The Elf, The Grinch, and The Polar Express. The holiday movies will be fun. For the Polar Express, kids and adults are encouraged to come dressed in their PJs. We wanted to host a Christmas camp because the kids will be out of school for 2 weeks on their Christmas vacation, and this will give them something fun to do here in town. The Christmas camp will be on Monday, December 20th through Wednesday, December 22nd from 1 to 3 p.m. Children will enjoy Christmas crafts, and then 3:30 to 4:30 will be a holiday movie in the theater. There will also be evening showings at 7 p.m. if the parents wish to join their children. With this position, I would love to see Fort Stockton grow, said Montoya. Utilizing the theater is just a part of that process. We want people to come here, but we also want our own community to stay here. When families leave town, so does the revenue. My job is to increase our revenue. Marketing Fort Stockton brings people to town to make all of that happen. My goal is to shine light on how Fort Stockton is a united town, a united city, and a united council. You don't see that very often. We've got good things going on here, and I appreciate all the support I get from the city manager and each council member.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, November 11th. Monahans Police Department sees over 30 gaming machines and $25,000 in raid. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A game room, which opened around a week ago, has been shut down after Monahans Police Department executed a search warrant on the property late Monday evening. An investigation on the illegal gaming room, located at 1100 North Main, was opened in reference to illegal gambling. According to MPD Captain Christopher Quintana, quote, the search warrant stems from an investigation involving the cash payout to patrons of the facility, which is a crime in Texas, he said. During the course of the investigation, officers confirmed patrons were being paid cash, and a search warrant was obtained and signed by Ward County Judge Greg Holly. Quote, approximately 37 gaming machines and equipment were seized, along with approximately $25,000 in cash, he said. No arrests were made during the operation. The investigation is still open for a court hearing on disposition on machines and cash seized. Ward County Sheriff's Office provided assistance in the execution of the search warrant. It wasn't clear as of press time who owned the facility. City Council moves on police budget increase. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Council members met on Tuesday for a relatively short agenda. After establishing a quorum and approving previous minutes, the board approved the second and final reading of Ordinance 1295, which will amend the preceding budget and increase the budget by $226,000. The city received grant funding from the CARES, Coronavirus Relief and Economic Security Act, which will reimburse the city for law enforcement payroll for the months of August, September, and October 2020. City Manager Rex Thee told council members during the last meeting the funding is able to be used to cover police salaries because first responders' actions during the pandemic went above and beyond the normal realm of their duties. The amendment will increase last year's general fund budget line item, Police Personnel Operational, by $226,000 from $1.3 million to $1.5 million. Attending were council members Calvin Carroll, Jeppy Wilson, Ivy Valenzuela, and Richard Hawkins, as well as Mayor Adam Steen. City Manager Rex Thee and Councilmember Rudy Hernandez were absent. In other business, the council members cast their votes for election of members to the Board of Directors of the Ward County Appraisal District. The votes for the top five nominees will be named to the Appraisal District Board. The council cast 92 votes, all to one candidate, or split the votes however they seem fit. On the ballot were Vicki Heflin, Ward County, and Camilla Blum, Ward County, Nancy Upchurch and Joel Kreiner, MWP-ISD, Julian Flores, PBT-ISD, Adam Steen, City of Monahans. Vicki Heflin, Nancy Upchurch, Camilla Blum, Joel Greiner, and Julian Flores all nominated by the City of Wicket. The council voted to cast all 92 votes for Adam Steen. In regular business, the October accounts payable were approved by the council, totaling $996,000. Aside from the usual expenses, such as payroll and fuel, some other items on the list were a payment of $139,000 to Holiday Chevrolet for two 2021 Chevy Tahoes. Premier Waterworks Incorporated received $103,000 for new water meters. Warren Catt was paid $26,000 for a scraper rental, filters to service. A payment of $6,700 was paid to Sports Turf Irrigation for Eagle 700 internal rebuild, and Monahans Volunteer Fire Department received $4,100 for drills, calls, and fires. The October monthly departmental reports and minutes were also approved by the City Council. Included in those were Monahans Economic Development Corporation financial report showed a beginning balance of $1.9 million and an ending balance of $1.9 million. The Economic Development Corporation is primarily funded from sales tax revenue. Quote, "They receive 25% of the amount the city receives in sales tax revenue each month, creating a steady source of income for them," Thee said. The City of Monahans building permit report from City Inspector Joel Melendez reflected 6 residential permits in October. Included were 2 permits for additions and repairs, 1 for re-roofing residents, and 2 for fencing, and 1 new home, totaling $29,600. On the commercial side, 3 permits were issued for additions and repairs, totaling $55,000. Monahans Municipal Court's monthly report for October showed 152 citations issued. Truck route violations for the month of October were up to 38, while the other citations were 5 tickets for speeding, 15 for failure to maintain financial responsibility, 14 for no driver's license, and 16 for expired registration. Municipal court fees totaled $17,000 for October. Another 49 animals were euthanized in October, according to Animal Control Officer Ben McGallery's monthly report. Of the 82 total animals impounded, 32 were dogs and 50 cats. 16 animals were adopted or released, and McGalvery picked up 16 deceased animals. As per city policy, impounded animals are only kept at the city pound for 3 days. Animals not adopted or picked up by their owners are euthanized after the 3-day waiting period. Anyone wishing to adopt an animal can call the Monahans Police Department at 943-3254. Roy Hurd Memorial Airport Manager Brett Gregory's report of 30 locally based aircraft included a total of 1,400 gallons of fuel sold and revenue for all base operations of $1,483. Code Enforcement Officer Richard Covington's monthly summary reported 69 written notices of violations, including cleanliness of premises and dangerous buildings. Of those, 61 have been cleared and 8 remain pending. The next City Council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, November 23rd, in the council chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. Renovated PT Clinic Open. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The renovated physical therapy clinic of Ward Memorial Hospital is now open after several months of extensive remodeling, bringing the clinic up to a state-of-the-art facility. Quote, "There is not a clinic anywhere in this area that is more modern or better equipped than our clinic," Hospital CEO Leticia Rodriguez told the Board of Managers in last Thursday's meeting. But earlier in the week, PT Director Craig Hughes resigned to accept a position elsewhere. Hughes will continue to work every other week at a salary of $90 per hour, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m., until a permanent director can be found. Additionally, another director will fill in at a salary of $750 per week to provide remote supervision and will be on-site as required. The remote supervision meets the requirement of having a director on staff, Rodriguez said. The managers authorized Rodriguez to seek a permanent replacement for Hughes. The conversion with CPSI and FMS continues to be problematic. A simplified explanation is that the CPSI, Computer Programs and Software Systems Incorporated, part of the software records hospital transactions, and that information is then ported to the FMS solution software that produces the reports. But the two systems are not communicating with each other. Quote, "The data is there. It is just being ported to FMS correctly," Rodriguez said. Four engineers were on site last week to review the issues and committed to have the problems resolved by December 31st. Interim CFO Peggy Hamilton said, quote, "Right now it is painstaking as everything is having to be entered manually. I will be able to build a spreadsheet of the needed data, which I believe will be 95% accurate," end quote. A contract with Alpha Expense Management was approved. The company will evaluate existing and new telecom services to review and report all usage and charges, seeking areas in which costs can be reduced. The firm will be compensated by receiving 50% of any money saved as the result of their review and accepted changes that result in lower overall costs. No changes will be made without the written approval from the hospital. The contract is valid for 24 months. Accounts payable totaling $824,000 was approved. Leading items were payroll, October 29th, $334,000, TCDRS, retirement, $129,000, and BioFire Diagnostics, $66,000. Cash on hand as of November 3rd was $6,180,000, and year-to-date collections were $11,208,000. A budget amendment transferring $19,400 from ER physician fees to maintenance software was approved unanimously. Two personnel changes were also approved. In routine business, minutes of the October 21st meeting were approved. Managers present were Dr. John Fawcett, Larry Hunt, Frank Heslin, Angel Fuentes, Lisa Stewart, and Jeff Burdick. Managers Tommy Escamilla and Gerald Carlson were not present. The next meeting of the managers will be held on November 18th at 6:15 p.m. in the Physical Therapy Building, 420 South Ike Street. Health Fair set for November 20th. Getting a grasp on health and wellness during the upcoming holiday season is a priority for many in the community. Understanding the top health concerns of our community, Ward Memorial Hospital is hosting a health fair on November 20th at the Ward County Event Center. Various activities at the fair will begin at 8:30 a.m. and run through 12:30 p.m. with numerous events, including free screenings, wellness demonstrations, a meet-and-greet Santa Claus, and more. Quote, "The goal of the Ward Memorial Hospital Health Fair is to bring countywide awareness to the importance of personal health and wellness," explains Leticia Rodriguez, CEO of Ward Memorial Hospital. Quote, "The best way to achieve this is to provide an interactive environment, welcoming the entire community to come out and learn more about the various health and wellness issues that face our community while having some fun in the process." Rodriguez said the health fair will offer practical and fun solutions that families can take home to make their lifestyles healthier. The free event will feature activities for participants of all ages, including engaging activities, demonstrations, and safety tips from local law enforcement officials. Numerous departments and services from Ward Memorial Hospital will be represented at the event, including dozens of local and regional businesses and organizations. Free or low-cost health screenings will also be available, including blood pressure status, weight and height measurements, pulmonary function demonstrations, oxygen saturation, glucose blood sugar screenings, and more. Quote, "The best way to stay healthy is to take care of your body. That means taking the time to learn about preventative measures and incorporating a well-balanced diet and plenty of physical activity," Rodriguez explains. Continuing the quote, "Our upcoming health fair will be an incredible way to reach out to members of our community whom we don't normally interact with to educate them on the value of a healthy lifestyle," end quote. In addition to local vendors and health screenings, Santa Claus will also be at the event, marking an excellent opportunity for area children to meet and take photos with him. Parents are encouraged to bring a camera or use their mobile phones to take pictures. Participants of all ages are welcome to take part in the Ward Memorial Health Fair. An adult must accompany all children. For the health and safety of the community, face coverings are strongly encouraged to be worn by all attendees. The Ward Memorial Hospital Health Fair will take place on November 20th from 8:30 a.m. until 12:30 p.m. at the Ward County Event Center at 1525 East Monahans Parkway. Admission is free for all attendees. For more information, please call Ward Memorial Hospital at 432-943-2511 or visit www.wardmemorial.com.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.